Do you ever find modern life a little distracting? Between pinging smartphones and always on internet, digital life is famously hard on focus. But this isn't just a modern problem. For centuries, people have struggled against distraction, as documented in the new book, Thoreau's Axe, Distraction and Discipline in American Culture, by Caleb Smith. Caleb is a professor of English at Yale University, and in his new book, he offers lessons on how to manage our own attention based on how 19th century writer Henry David Thoreau and his contemporaries managed their own. Here's Caleb to share five of his big ideas.
Hey there, this is Caleb Smith. I'm a critic and professor at Yale University, where I teach courses about American literature, our religious traditions, and our legal and cultural institutions. I'm here to share five ideas from my new book, Thoreau's Axe, Distraction and Discipline in American Culture. Thoreau's Axe is a book about distraction, the feeling that your mind is wandering and drifting away from what really matters. It's also a book about discipline, especially self-discipline, all the ways that people try to rehabilitate and retrain themselves out of distraction, to cultivate better concentration and presence of mind in a distracting world. I call these kinds of training and self-training disciplines of attention. So here we go. First idea. In our society, distraction always seems to call for discipline. These days, if you look around our culture, flipping through the channels or reading a newspaper or browsing the self-help aisle at a popular bookstore, you can see that anxieties about distraction are all over the place. People are really worried, and for good reasons, about shorter attention spans, about too much information and disinformation, about all the ways that our thoughts are being manipulated, about how our attention is being directed and redirected, maybe by our employers, by our markets, or by our media, especially online social media. And while you're looking around our culture, seeing all this worry about distraction, you'll also see how, over and over again, people keep proposing the same kind of solution. It always seems to come down to discipline. For instance, they tell you that you've got to break your bad mental habits and learn some new, better habits. And to get there, you've got to practice some new mental or even spiritual exercises, new styles of meditation or mindfulness, new ways of focusing your attention. It might tell you that you can use these techniques to improve your everyday mental health or to improve your personal relationships, to become more creative, to achieve greater productivity at work. After a while, you might start to wonder, how long has this been going on? If discipline is a solution to distraction, why hasn't it worked? Why does the same cycle keep on repeating itself? We know that, in our consumer society, advertisers are good at creating and stoking new desires, even new needs, to keep us always shopping for new products. All that stimulation is a big part of our distraction. But as we keep hearing sales pitches for new disciplines of attention, we might have some doubts about whether the marketplace that creates and benefits from our distraction can really promise to heal us from it. So, how can we think outside this cycle? The loop that keeps us traveling the circuit from anxious distraction to self-discipline and back again. Big idea number two. Distraction has a history. So does attention. In Thoreau's Axe, I try to see distraction and the disciplines of attention within a history that goes back way before email and cell phones and social media platforms. As a matter of fact, you could go back almost forever. Scholars who study the practices of classical philosophers or who explore the prayer regimens of medieval monks will remind us that people have been struggling against some kinds of distraction for thousands of years. Ancient philosophers and seekers developed sophisticated techniques, sometimes known as spiritual exercises, to train and guide their own attention. They wanted to detach their minds from the cares and passions of what they called this world, the material and social world of everyday life. They wanted to turn their attention to higher, eternal, spiritual matters. Even now, lots of writers and attention gurus call back to those ancient traditions as sources of inspiration. My book goes back only 200 or 300 years, not 2,000 or 3,000. But I do look into some efforts to revive older religious traditions. For many centuries, when Christians thought about the sources of distraction, they didn't think about video games or even newspapers. They thought about the devil or about demons or about sin. One minister in the early 1700s gave a whole sermon exploring the question, when is distraction a sin, and when is it only a lesser offense, a human weakness that deserves forgiveness? The minister's lesson was that people could overcome the devil's distractions by exercising their free will. For instance, by concentrating on the sermon that the minister was preaching just then in just that church. These traditions help us understand that the problem of distraction is not exactly a new one. But there's also a risk in seeing distraction as a perennial problem, something that has always been with us and always will be as part of our human nature. Paradoxically, this way of thinking leaves us more or less back where we started, with the sense that distraction can only be overcome through personal disciplines. Or else, after the rise of secular scientific understandings of our human nature, it leaves us with the sense that distraction is really a medical problem, best left to doctors and pharmaceutical companies. Really thinking historically means seeing distraction as an old problem, but it also means seeing how the problem has changed over time under different conditions. Big idea number three. Around 200 years ago, new economic systems and new technologies created a new understanding of distraction. The title of my book, Thoreau's Axe, comes from a passage from the great American writer and naturalist Henry David Thoreau. As you probably know, in the 1840s, Thoreau famously went to live by himself in the woods on the shores of Walden Pond outside Concord, Massachusetts. But something happened just as he was getting started. While he was cutting some white pine trees to build his little house, his mind began to wander, and he broke the axe that he had borrowed from a friend. And so Thoreau had to repair the axe, and while he worked on it, he did some soul-searching about his own state of mind. Thoreau ended up writing some passages about distraction and attention that still resonate today. For instance, he wrote about new technologies, "Our inventions are wont to be pretty toys which distract our attention from serious things." He also talked about how the human mind can be, as he put it, permanently profaned by the habit of attending to trivial things. In some ways, Thoreau sounded like an ancient philosopher or a religious mystic, and he did know about those traditions. But Thoreau was also saying something different, something new. He was saying that the sources of distraction are not in our human nature. They are artificial. They are in the economy, in modern systems of production and consumption, in the ways we work and in the ways we try to entertain ourselves. Already in Thoreau's lifetime, industry was making new demands on workers' attention in factories and workshops. Commerce was making new demands on consumers' attention in advertising, the news media, and the marketplace. Thoreau is sometimes remembered as a hermit out in the woods, but he was really far from alone. Lots of other writers, people of faith, and activists felt the same way. As far away as Louisiana, a Creole poet and mystic named Adrienne Rouquette called the 19th century an age of machines and money. In Philadelphia, a judge and reformer worried about the wayward and restless youths who throng the places of cheap and vulgar amusement in which the city abounds. And so 19th century thinkers came to see distraction more or less as we do now, as an effect of modern economic and technological forces. But then, at the same time, while they were updating their theory of distraction as a problem, they still kept turning back to the same old solution, back to discipline. Big idea number four, attention training became a form of social control. This might sound strange. Nowadays, we're most likely to feel manipulated by algorithms that distract us, keeping us flitting around from site to site, rather than training us to pay attention in a sustained way to just one object. But if we're really going to understand distraction, one thing we have to understand is why people want it, why distraction sometimes feels like freedom, or at least like a temporary escape from an oppressive situation. And the reason is because lots of powerful people and institutions do try to control and train and guide our attention. In the 19th century, this was happening on slave plantations, where the enforcer, known as the overseer, represented a vigilant kind of surveillance over the discipline of enslaved laborers. It was going on in factories and workshops, which were developing their own new techniques of management to keep workers from becoming distracted at their machines. It was happening in churches and at evangelical revivals. And it was happening in disciplinary institutions, too, in penitentiaries, in juvenile reformatories, and in an expanding network of schools for the children of the poor. I spent some time with the history of the Massachusetts Reform School, the nation's first state-run juvenile reformatory, which was built in a rustic setting far from factories and the distractions of urban life, overlooking a little pond. The state had more or less the same theory of distraction and attention that took Thoreau to Walden at just the same time, but the state used this theory to build a youth prison. Police and prisons helped to defend private property, and meanwhile, juvenile reformatories helped to train young people for the rigors of labor in the new industrial economy. Those institutions are obviously coercive, but even private, voluntary regimens of self-discipline or self-care can serve a similar purpose. either by helping people cope with the stresses of work or by becoming commodities in their own right, just so many more products for sale in a marketplace full of distractions. Big idea number five. If distraction is an effect of economic conditions, so is attention. What took shape in the 19th century was a predicament that we're still stuck in now. Even when we understand that distraction's real causes are in the large-scale economic systems and technologies that shape our world, we keep trying to solve the problem with personal disciplines. Whether these disciplines are imposed by institutions or taken up voluntarily, their function is to privatize the rehabilitation of our own attention. Even when we know that big business is causing and profiting from our distraction, we feel guilty and we make ourselves personally responsible. Sometimes this responsibility looks like repression, as in the case of a youth prison. Sometimes it can be quite strange and beautiful, as in the many spiritual exercises and practices of devotion that are recorded in our literature. Reading that literature is my own discipline of attention. But one important conclusion we can draw from history is that real attention requires some free time and some shelter, which are harder and harder to come by in the modern economy. People need more control over their own time and more protection from manipulation. To deal with the problem of distraction, we would have to transform our economic conditions, not just ourselves. Thanks for listening. I invite you to read more about distraction and discipline in the book.
Thank you, Caleb. That was Caleb Smith with five big ideas from Thoreau's Axe, Distraction and Discipline in American Culture. I'm Michael Kavnat. Have a great day.